The faster we can get people into buildings to not only put water on the fire, but to also search the areas, the better it is for everyone, including firefighters. Rather than having two people standing outside while two people are inside, if we have four people, put in the work.
This is Code 3, the Firefighters Podcast, hosted by award-winning journalist Scott Orr. Now, here's Scott.
That's right, and I will not let Parkinson stop me. Welcome back to another edition of Code 3. This is the show for and about firefighters. Give me 20 minutes and I'll give you a firefighting topic to think about. One subject, one guest, no wasted time. Now let's get started. How many times have you pulled up to a location, seen fire blowing out of the second story windows, and thought, there is no way anyone's alive in there? Today's guest argues that firefighters have been making that call far too early, and it's often based on outdated information campaigns and fear rather than real-world data. You took an oath to protect life. It's the driving force behind every decision you make when you pull up to a working fire. But that drive has to be balanced with reality. The question isn't just, is the building searchable? The harder question is it survivable? Joining us today is Sean Duffy, a firefighter on a mission to redefine the boundary between searchable space and survivable space. Sean is a vocal advocate for the Firefighter Rescue Survey. He uses hard data to prove that victims can and do survive in structures with over 75% fire involvement. Sean is a highly respected instructor and the voice behind the presentation, Searchable versus Survivable, Educated Decision-Making. He's here to discuss how to move beyond guessing and start using data, fire behavior, and building construction to make the toughest call on the fire ground. He's a firefighter for the city of Ann Arbor, Michigan, where he's been for almost 20 years. I last had him on the show talking about the reasons why two in, two out is a concept whose time has passed. Sean Duffy, welcome back to Code 3.
Hey, thanks for the invite. Appreciate you having me on today.
It's great to have you here. Was there a specific moment or incident on a fire ground that made you realize the fire service was confusing searchable space with survivable space?
Yeah, that's a little multi-faceted for me, but basically, it was more conversations than anything else, you know, how people would show up and just be like, oh, nobody can possibly be alive in there. And, you know, they were confusing the percentage of fire involvement based off of, you know, like what their idea that would that be. So people were calling fully involved, you know, and you would get there and it just wouldn't be that case. And search was being delayed. So for me, I made it my mission to say, like, what does this truly mean? And can we do better? You know, maybe our terminology needs to change. Maybe our mindset needs to change. What about the search in itself needs to change? So that became my mission to prove that, you know, our eyes are deceiving. And although we may not truly believe that people are alive, that we have data now that backs that, you know, even with well-involved structures, greater than 75%, we're removing people. And they're surviving. So I felt that was an important thing to highlight and tell people.
Now, how do you distinguish between a searchable space and a survivable space? Why is that distinction critical for the first arriving officer to make?
That's a great question. So for me, I like to kind of paint the picture that we're not God, right? We can't say who's going to survive and who's not going to survive. We're there to make every effort we possibly can to search. And our job is, if we can occupy that space with our knowledge, training, equipment, and all of that, then we need to give it every chance that we can. Ultimately, when we locate a victim, we remove them, we hand them off to EMS care, and that's what's going to determine survival rates from there. Our job isn't to do that from the front yard. Our job is to determine, is that space adequate enough for me to enter? And if that question is yes, then we go and we give that search.
You sometimes talk about fact-based versus fear-based decision-making. How do the preconceived notions about fire dynamics lead officers to write off a building a little too early?
Well, I think there's a lot of information that we blindly follow in the fire service. We don't question it for whatever reason.
Is that a result of history and culture?
I believe so. You know, one of the things that I was taught coming in was, you know, fire doubles in size every 90 seconds. And we know that, you know, that's not necessarily the case. You know, we have things in our homes now that definitely contribute to fire spread, but that was based off a campaign, you know, that we were trying to tell kids if they can remember one, they can remember two type thing. And we just kind of repeated it and continued to repeat it. So we have things like that that are happening in the fire service that I think we really need to like slow down and say, what does this mean? You know, instead of showing up and looking at a structure and be like, that's nasty, thick smoke. There's no way anyone's alive in there. Like, maybe we need to look at that same thing and say, okay, where's my fire? Where has it been? Where do I project it to go? And how much time do I realistically have in this space if I was going to make this happen? You know, those are the things that we need to kind of focus on and start making our search efforts off of.
That's the bag method for size up.
Absolutely, yes.
So where's it been? Where's it at? Where is it going? How does applying that filter change where the crew decides to enter the building?
I think that that applies because when we can show up, you know, and we can say, okay, I have visible fire from here. I have turbulent smoke chugging from this window here. Then we start putting that pieces together of like, okay, what's on fire is already lost. This is about to go off fire. So I really have two options for me. I create and maintain searchable space, or I keep from losing the searchable space that I currently have. Both of those are achieved by either isolation or ventilation. And I think that's the question. You know, do I need to put a line in place right now? You know, if I'm going to go do a vent enter search technique here, do I have enough time to ventilate this and isolate this space before I lose the space? Or do I support the search with water applications so that I can do those two things? So there's a lot of options that we can pick from. We just got to understand what they are and how to implement them.
Now, survivability profiling, it was popular for years. Do you feel it was weaponized to justify inaction? And how does your data from the Firefighter Rescue Survey challenge it?
Yeah, so I do think it was weaponized. Now, I don't think that was intentional.
It just happened.
Yeah, I think it just happens, you know, just like anything else. You know, it's not even fire service related. You know, if you can have an excuse why to or why not to do something, well, you know, human nature is that we're going to try and take advantage of that, right? So
yep.
I think it's easy for people who might be timid or unsure to look at something and use the survivability profiling as a reason of why they did not do it. So that leads to the firefighter rescue survey. You know, as you dissect that, there's a lot of information. This is happening. You know, we're getting real information from real fires, you know, and although it's voluntary, it's data that we didn't have before. So when we start putting that together and we look at it of where's the victims most likely located, what time of day, you know, who found them? Was it the search crew or the fire attack crew? You know, all these questions start coming together, then we start realizing that like our actions as firefighters are largely contributing to the survival rates of our victims and pre-fire. You know, our victims are listening, the Close Before You Doze campaign and things like that. So back to the survivability profiling things, I think we have through, you know, ULFSRI and all these other great things that are happening in fire service, we have a lot of factual evidence now to prove that we just can't say for sure. You know, until we occupy that interior and we make that effort, unless it's blowing out of every single window, you know, wall to wall, treetops tall, if there's a space, there's a possibility, right? And that's what we got to start shaping our minds to realize and stop sitting there and saying, nope, no way. Or using the, you know, excuse like, you know, the us first mentality, you know, I know that's a little taboo, but like, you know, I'm not saying being reckless. I'm saying being intelligently aggressive. That's where we need to get to.
I'll be back with more right after this. Stay with us. If you own a business, large or small, I've got an idea for you. Why not advertise in this podcast? After all, if your market is members of the fire service, they're already listening to Code 3. And Code 3 is returning to a two-a-week schedule this summer. The price to speak directly to thousands of firefighters, company officers, and chiefs is surprisingly affordable. Reach the people you want as customers. Just email Scott at code3podcast.com and we'll get you on the air. Well, let's talk about that for a second. When an officer pulls up and sees a well-involved building, his or her reaction is to focus on the threat. So how do you get them to start looking for the opportunities in the searchable space instead of that?
I would say, you know, that happens. We do a 360 for fire, right? We'll make sure we're doing our 360. We get a good view. On that 360, while we're developing our initial attack plan, like, we're looking at the same thing for where we're going to put people into the building for search, right? You know, and everybody's staffing level is different, so that might be a little slower. I would say that if I had the choice between putting water on a fire right now or putting people in a space right now, it's a very fine line. You know, majority of the time, putting water and getting water flowing and making those conditions better is going to be absolutely imperative that we get that done. So I don't want to say one way or another all the time. What I would say is, you know, can you do both? Can you put water and start making conditions better while you're doing your 360 and getting information and then saying, okay, if we're going to make a search, it's going to happen right here. This is where we're sending people. What does your assignments look like? You know, how far is your next due? You know, for me, where I work, my next due is only, you know, maybe 2 minutes behind me. So if I'm showing up on the first arriving engine, I'm doing my 360, I can pass that information on to oncoming crews and say, hey, we have searchable space on Charlie Delta Corner. We're making initial fire attack from side alpha. And that paints the picture for everybody that, hey, we're going to put water on this thing. We're going to put a line between the fire and the victims, and we're going to, you know, do the things we need to do. But that next two people or three people showing up, we need to search this space like right now. I would think that instead of just passing it off and getting so fire focused, which we tend to do, having that more open-minded approach to things of taking in the bigger picture and laying out the assignments. And, you know, that could even be something that departments can do in pre-arrival assignments and policies and procedures.
Well, yeah. I mean, when the firefighters arrive on the scene before the officer, don't they need to perform a search, size up, and look for victim cues in isolated spaces themselves?
Yeah, absolutely.
The first thing you want to do is get in the door with a line, obviously. But maybe that's not what they need to be thinking about.
Yeah, I would say, like, you know, we tend to be our own worst enemies. Like I said, moth to the flame, right? Our eyes naturally track movement and light. That's how our brains are wired. So we see the fire, we get super hyper-focused on that, and we tend to miss other things. So yeah, 100%. If you're showing up, like, where's your searchable space? And there's a, you know, I'll tell you, if there's two of you showing up, I'm not going to say that there's not a chance that you might have to make a rescue before you put water on a fire. You know, sometimes that happens. I would just caution people to be aware that, like, what does that look like? And that we're not saying that you should always search before putting water on the fire. You know, what I'm saying is understand your conditions, understand your building layout, you know, understand what your crew ability is and what your training is on things. There's a lot more to it than just showing up and saying, hey, come on, let's go search, right? I did that once when I was young in my career, and it did not work out well for me, you know. So
well, let's address that. In an era where risk management's the buzzword, how do you argue that aggressive search is risk management rather than recklessness?
I would say that, you know, search is recon, right? We're gathering information. So if we're going in and we're doing something ahead of the handline there, hopefully that handline is coming in shortly after you. What we do in that aspect is you're still locating fire first, right? If we're going ahead of the handline, the worst thing you can do is start searching freely and blindly and not identifying where this fire is and can I isolate it and confine it to the area of origin. Because when we get there, we got to be able to relay that information, right? the best thing we can do is isolate that, because now I can say, and you know, engine one to engine two, your fire's in the rear, you know, stretch this way. I can give them the best direct route to it. And then we can go hands-free. We know that the fire is isolated and contained, or maybe it's not, right? And if we're not able to contain it, then what does that mean? That means we keep things a little tighter, right? Hey, I know this fire's here. We got to keep an eye on that so that we don't get cut off by it. We're going to search these immediate areas that we can. And hopefully the information we're giving is getting relayed so that we can get water on this thing as fast as possible as well. The risk management to me is the fact that when everybody on the fire ground is aware of what's happening and they know their jobs, the faster we can get people into buildings to not only put water on the fire, but to also search the areas, the better it is for everyone, including firefighters. Rather than having two people standing outside while two people are inside, if we have four people, put them to work, split the workload. Two of you search, two of you fight fire, you know, and that's.
Even if you're not a truckie.
Even if you're not a truckie, absolutely. Like, there's departments in this country that don't have truck companies.
Yeah.
Searching, to me, like, if you're in a fire department that has a truck company and that's what they do, that's great. But if you're not, that's still a fire ground skill. You should be able to show up on an engine company and do that. You should be able to show up on an engine company and ventilate a roof. Those are firefighting objectives that happen on the fire ground. So I think everybody being well versed in that and what that looks like is definitely a crucial part of this operation.
I just had a firefighter on who said people don't care about the things that firefighters care about. They care about whether you can put out the fire and whether you can find people who are lost or trapped. And that's all they care about.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, we in my fire department, we have a policy, and in that policy for search, it says that search is not apparatus specific. And it, for that reason, right there, you know, who cares who does it? It just needs to get done.
That makes sense. All right. So you sometimes talk about time is not a luxury we have. How do you balance the need for speed in the primary search with the need for crew accountability and some safety too?
I think that boils down to understanding what it is we're doing, right? When I teach search to people in my fire department, I let them know, like, hey, you know, we're all on different levels depending on where you're at. If you come to me and this is your first day and you're out of the fire academy, we got to search, right? That's going to have to happen. But this is your first fire ever. So I can't just let the reins go and say, go do this. That would be...
That would be irresponsible, Ryan.
Right. So I'm going to have to tailor my search mechanics, my communication, everything to the, hey, listen, we're going to keep things tighter. Maybe normally I would say we can go three thresholds, you know, away from each other while we're searching. But today you're going to be right next to me. And we're going to do that even if we have an experienced crew and conditions are really bad. We want to bring things in tight.
Here's a question. You got that probie with you on the first day. Do you put him on the line where he can hang on to something, or do you take him and search with him?
I guess that would depend on their assignment. You know, if they're on the fire attack line, then I want you getting to that fire with that nozzle. That's what we're going to do. If we're on search, you know, then I'm going to keep the communication clear and you're going to be pretty close to me. I don't necessarily need you being married to a hand line. I need you moving and using your hands to search the space. The difference for me would be maybe instead of being 15 feet away from you, I'm only, you know, 5 to 6 feet away from you so that I can still monitor conditions with, you know, my thermal imager or anything like that. And we can still clear spaces, because at the end of the day, how do you get experience?
By doing it.
So if I'm trying to protect somebody, I'm like, don't let go of this. Don't do this. Don't. I'm not really helping them out. I'm not allowing them to get that experience. So that's where we fall back to more of an anchored person search, where I might sit at the door and say, go search this room. And I'm right here at the door. You know, if that person had a little bit more experience, I might take, hey, I'll search the room across the hall. You search this one. But we're not at that point yet. Right. So I've got to slow that down a little bit and make sure that we're still moving with a good pace. But I'm giving experience. Two, I'm not just blindly, you know, throwing somebody into a situation that maybe they've never been in before. You know, that's asking for problems. So, you know, we got to understand what the search looks like, how to be able to tailor the search to the crew's ability. And then we go back, we talk about it, we break it down, we train on it. And as time goes, you know, we build that trust, that confidence. And then maybe the next fire, we say, hey, you know, I'm going to be 8 feet away from you now. You're going to be searching this room. I'm going to search this hallway, you know, and things like that, you know.
Just yell if you need anything.
Right. You know, and everything, especially if we got a hand line. Man, if you got a hand line in play and there's water flowing on the fire and we're getting a good handle on this fire, there's really not much that I'm worried about, especially if we're going into spaces. Like, and I've taught this firefighter, hey, when you go into a space, open up the window, start getting that ventilation going. We've got water on the fire. Everything's fine. Like, we're good, right? I start teaching them that. Water's on the fire. Things are getting ventilated. Visibility improves. It's better for us. It's better for victims.
Okay. Now, if a department wants to rewrite their search SOGs tomorrow to reflect searchable versus survivable, what's the first sentence they need to change?
Oh, man, that's... I don't know if I have a good answer for that, to be honest. I would say if you were going to change anything, rewrite your SOPs in the realm of search, trust. I mean, honestly, a lot comes down to trust. You got to be able to trust your crews to do what they need to do, right? We can't micromanage people in a situation like that.
So, okay, you're saying the first sentence then would involve a company officer instruction.
Yeah, I would say trust your company officers. Intuition.
A firefighter is listening to this and he's working a shift tomorrow. What's one tangible change he can make to size up his routine immediately?
Are we talking about before the fire comes in or at the fire ground?
Well, I think probably at the fire ground is a better one. But then again, I mean, I hadn't thought about before you leave the building, there's something to do. So why don't we start with that? What's one tangible change they need to make to their size of routine immediately, but that they would make it in the building before they leave?
It's not necessarily size up at the building before they leave. Well, actually, yeah, I'll get there. Let's start here. Starting your shift, coming in, start your shift. You should be putting your hands on your equipment and getting a quick rep. Masking up, getting that on quickly, because, you know, time outside is time wasted for us inside if we can't do things efficiently. So get comfortable masking up, preferably masking up with your gloves on if you can, you know, so that you can get those reps. Now, fire comes in. Make sure you listen. Listen to that dispatch. You know, where are we going? Is this a single story? Is this a, you know, two story? What is it, right? What are the reports? Where's, you know, sometimes they'll say, you know, smoke showing from the second floor or something like that. Like all of that stuff, trying to take in to paint a picture in your head and matching it with what you see when you arrive, right? Now that you're arrived, me as a backseat firefighter personally, I'm looking at smoke. What is the smoke doing? I'm looking at, you know, if I'm stretching the line, where am I going? I'm keeping my eyes on that structure the whole time because I don't want to miss anything. I don't want to miss if somebody was to pop up from a window. I don't want to miss if conditions change. I want to keep that big, you know, full picture view. And then I'm looking at it, okay, you know, which way am I going to be going through this building? Am I going in and making a left? Am I going and making a right? Where are my bedrooms most likely to be? Because statistically, that's where I'm going to find my victims, right? So we all got to like build in. And I guess to answer your question, the best way I can answer your question, what would a new firefighter do to prepare their size up? Learn the firefighter rescue survey. Where are your victims located? Primarily.
Learn your
fire behavior. Take a smoke reading class. You know, what does this mean to me? And learn your building construction. If you can get those three things dialed in, I think you're doing pretty good before the fire comes in and you're able to make some pretty good decisions instinctively because you understand them.
All right. Now, beyond just tactics, your group focuses on building your culture. How does a company officer instill a culture of aggressive search in a crew that might be hesitant, or I'm not going to say afraid, but inexperienced, a little hesitant to go in? How does he build up the culture in that group?
I think that still boils down to trust, right? If your people don't trust you, they're not going to listen to you. It doesn't matter what you're doing, right? I'm saying this, I'm not a company officer, but I'm saying this from a position that I work for some great company officers, and they value the input of their crew. They also say, hey, what do you think? Right? We're having these conversations. They're building confidence. You know, how do you train? Are you going out there every day? Show me how you would search. Okay, cool. Try this. Try that. Are you even on the same page? Because there's many conversations that happen. You know, when I was a young fireman, I'd ask my officer, hey, what do you expect of me today? And one officer would give me a list and like, this is exactly what I want you to do. And then we would practice and train on that stuff so that I understood it. Some company officers would say, I want you to do your job. Well, what is that? You know what I mean? What does that even mean? So I would think as a company officer, when you're trying to build culture for the search and everything, you yourself need to understand this information. Because at the end of the day, you're probably going to be the one calling the shots anyway, right? But also understand, who do you have on your crew? You might have somebody on your crew that loves search and they're all, you know, they know everything there is to know about it. As a company officer, you probably want that information too. So that boils back down to trust and listening and figuring out, okay, how does this work into our operations, right? What commands am I saying to you? Are you searching on my boot? Am I comfortable with you getting out, like off of me a little bit? Those are all conversations that you need to have, and you need to revisit it, preferably after fires too. Break that down, sit at the table. Hey, what were you thinking? Well, I was thinking this. Okay. Well, what did you see? What did you feel? Like, this is all learning, right? And the more we can sit down together and put things together, the better this is going to be. And, you know, the more free thinkers you're going to have. And in a good way, not a bad way. I'm not saying that we should freelance. I'm just saying, like, sometimes we need to let people know through our direction, it's okay to have a brain and use it, you know? So,
well, I mean, we're paying them to make decisions as adults. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they shouldn't be thought of as robots that just go in the door and do what they're told and then come back out the door.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point for a company officer. I like to know what my company officer wants me to do, and I like to do it without being told.
Right.
You know, so when I come off the rig, if I'm assigned search, I should have had this conversation already. We should have trained this so I know what my company officer is thinking. And if it doesn't change, then everybody knows the game plan.
Yeah.
If he or she says, hey, hold on a second, then everyone stops and listens, right? And we got to have that kind of approach to things, you know, so that we can just start operating as a well-oiled machine.
All right. That was a great talk, Sean Duffy. Thanks for joining me on Code 3 today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
Sean is really into using hard data to support his arguments. If you'd like to know more about searchability versus survivability, check out our website, code3podcast.com/survivable. Now some housekeeping. You can find Code 3 t-shirts, mugs, and other cool Code 3 stuff like posters at the Code 3 store. Just go to the website and click on the link. It's stuff you're going to want to see, especially the posters and the calendar. They're pretty hot. And if you like the show and you get useful information from it, then I've got two things to ask you. First, please go to your podcast app, rate and review the show. Good reviews and ratings tell other firefighters that the show is worth their time. And then if you'd tell some other brothers and sisters in your firehouse about the podcast, I'd really appreciate it. Surveys show that word of mouth is the best way to get new people to join the audience. So tell your coworkers. Thanks. And join me next week here on Code 3 when I'll be talking to Todd Edwards about size ups.
Over 6% of maydays occurred when nobody saw the rear of the structure. Seeing all four sides, obviously, my deal is to pull just past the structure and give me that three-sided view just as I'm approaching. But then I just have such a strong emphasis on company officers and people in charge. They've got to go and see the rear of that building.
That's next week on Code 3. And that's it. That's all for this edition of Code 3. Please join me next week for more. Until then, I'm Scott Orr. Stay safe.
To contact us, get more information on today's show, or to subscribe to the podcast, go to code3podcast.com.